Following episode of K-Voice was recorded at midnight, May 2nd, 2017. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
Now we can whimper, we can whine, or we can fight back. Me, I'm here to fight back! I'm here to fight back!
Love me some Elizabeth Warren. Thank you for listening to K Voice of the Resistance. That's the letter K, Voice of the Resistance. Okay, let's run down some of the, well, for lack of a better word, crap of this administration's recent actions. According to CNN, the Trump administration is ending Michelle Obama's girls' education program. It is discontinuing a signature girls' education initiative championed by former First Lady Michelle Obama. According to officials, the Let Girls Learn program, which she and Barack Obama started in 2015 to facilitate educational opportunities for adolescent girls in developing countries, will cease operation immediately. You know, because why do girls need to learn? Silly girls.
Come on, man.
I was reminded of Obama's excellent Come On, Man. And since I used Elijah Cummings last week, I had to bring in Obama's this week. We have good and bad news. According to Vox, an appeals court just let Obama's net neutrality rules stand. A federal appeals court voted on Monday not to reconsider a court ruling upholding the legality of Obama's network neutrality rules. Monday's decision represented the second-to-last hurdle those rules needed to clear. Now the opponents of the regulations need to decide whether or not to appeal the ruling to the Supreme Court. But the Supreme Court will have a good reason to delay. The new Republican chair of the FCC has announced plans to dismantle the rules. By the time the Supreme Court rules on the FCC's old rules in late 2017 or early 2018, it's likely the issue will be moot and we will no longer have a free and equal internet.
Come on, man!
The threat on the media still looms. According to Reince Priebus, the Republican administration is still considering how to make it easier to sue the media.
Come on, man.
Donald's and our soon-to-be Wall Street cop is a big defender of Wall Street. And when I say big, I mean Kanye's ego big defender of Wall Street. According to CNN, Jay Clayton, a star Wall Street lawyer picked to lead the SEC, has a list of clients that reads like the who's who of companies accused of shady practices. There's Volkswagen, which has pled guilty to criminal charges over cheating emissions test. Valeant, a drug maker accused of being the Enron of the pharma world for fraud. And Deschutes Bank, which has been charged with a $10 billion Russian money laundering scheme. You might have heard, some of Trump's peeps are a little mixed up in that one. Clayton also represented the very industry he's supposed to police. He advised Goldman Sachs on its controversial government bailout and Bear Stearns on its 2008 fire sale of J.P. Morgan. As a partner at the elite firm Sullivan & Cromwell, Clayton pooled in a $7.6 million salary. In the last year, he can make another $1 million when he steps down. Well, this charmer is moving through the Senate this week and will soon be confirmed. Yay!
Come on, man!
Sonny Perdue. You might remember Sonny Perdue from last week. Sonny Perdue rolled back Michelle Obama's healthy eating standards in schools. Because, you know, diabetes makes America great again?
Come on, man!
And Donald. Donald has given the order, and exploration of the outer continental shelf will begin. According to Countable, it will be upsetting the fishing industry, as well as tourism industry, and the military. Those waters are used for military exercises. Not to mention California, who will not stand for drilling off of our shores. He will be disrupting, if not destroying, preserves as well. And just about everything else in the area. Drill, baby, drill. For those who do care, there, the future's only hope may be perhaps that the cost of drilling versus the return is not as profitable as it once was. The longer we can stall these guys, the less return on their investment they make, and that, my friends, is just fine with me. Okay, this is interesting. As the debate over whether or not we should stay in the Paris Climate Accord looms, some coal companies may want Donald to stay in the Paris Climate Deal. According to Politico, the coal industry is divided over whether Donald should pull the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Change Agreement, with some producers hoping they could gain some economic leverage if he chooses to stay in. The top three U.S. coal producers, believe it or not, Peabody Energy, Arch Coal, and Cloud Peak Energy, indicate in recent meetings with White House officials that they would not publicly object to sticking in the international accord, particularly if the administration can secure more financial support for technology to reduce pollution from the use of coal, according to the industry's officials and sources close to the administration. Okay. One reason having Mike Pence as president may not be worse is Donald is taking the religious right actions the same as Pence would do. Donald, on Friday, said that he would name one of the most prominent anti-abortion activists in the country to a top communications post in HHS, Department of Health and Human Services, Charmin Yost. This woman has been tapped to be assistant of Secretary of Public Affairs. She is a senior fellow at American Values. She's the former president of Americans United for Life, which has been instrumental in advancing anti-abortion legislation at the state level to restrict access to the procedure. Yost's appointment comes at a time when states and Republican governors and GOP-dominated legislatures have enacted a wave of new abortion restrictions, many of which have been blocked in the court, thankfully. Politico makes the point that this appointee comes when states, on average, have added 57 new abortion restrictions annually between 2011 and 2015, a pace that picked up dramatically following the 2010 midterm elections. Republicans currently control both chambers of the legislatures in 32 states, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. We need to get out and vote and turn America blue. This is desperate, you guys. 33 states have GOP governors. And, unsurprisingly, Yost isn't the only Trump administration appointee who has expressed critical views about abortion and other social issues. Katie Tolento, for example, a health aide for the White House Domestic Policy Council, has taken the controversial view that contraception poses major dangers to women and causes abortion and miscarriages. It doesn't. It just doesn't. Yost is an HHS political appointee, but her appointment does not require Senate confirmation, so she's in. She succeeds Kevin Griffiths, who was recently named the Vice President of Communications for Planned Parenthood. God, Obama really did it right, didn't he? All right, let's go down this rabbit hole. 30% of American women will have an abortion by age 45, according to the Guttmacher Institute, a leading sexual and reproductive health research and policy organization. You probably know someone who has had an abortion. There are also persistent myths that people seeking abortions are mainly lower class or women of color. Leah Torres, MD and OBGYN, practicing in Salt Lake City, Utah, told Self, "Many religious women would never get abortions." That is not true. Women of all races get abortions, according to the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention's most recent abortion surveillance data. And 6 in 10 abortion clinics are in majority white communities, says the Guttmacher Institute. Lastly, only 38% of women seeking abortions in 2014 had no religious affiliation, according to a different Guttmacher Institute report. Fewer than one woman dies every 100,000 legal abortions carried out by a professional, according to the CDC's abortion surveillance data. In comparison, 15.9% died per 100,000 live births in 2012, per the Centers of Disease Control's pregnancy mortality data. That makes childbirth about 14 times more deadly than an abortion. So, to the dude on my Facebook page who mocked my friend for pointing out that pro-lifers didn't care about women's lives by saying, quote, "So your feeling is that having an abortion saves lives of mothers? Wow." Unquote. You don't know what you're talking about. Come back after you have attempted some research. Sorry. Anyway, they found out that although more than 53% of women who got abortions found the choice difficult or very difficult, over 99% of women who got abortions thought it was the right decision. And 59% of women who have already had abortions have already given birth. And the rest who are not mothers, many want children at some point. They just know it's not the right time. People who use birth control but do so incorrectly and inconsistently make up 41% of unintended pregnancies, according to the Guttmacher Institute again. It's often not about being irresponsible, but being human and not doing everything perfectly all the time. And, importantly, women are not using abortion as birth control. And it is estimated that not all pro-choice people would choose to get abortions themselves. Abortion providers do not make a ton of money performing these procedures. Abortion is legal. It's still really hard to get in some places. And getting rid of access to abortions does not get rid of abortion. Women will just take actions that will endanger their own lives on their own. In March, a New York Times report showed that Google searches for DIY abortions are rising as various states tighten abortion access. The morning after pill and the abortion pill are not the same thing. Listen, access to safe and legal abortion is actually a public health issue. If someone were committed to having unprotected sex for their entire lives but didn't want to have children, they would need to get upwards of 20 abortions. Whether people seek abortions for physical or mental reasons, abortion is ultimately about public health. Being able to end a pregnancy safely and legally helps prevent the kind of illegal botched-at-home abortions that can kill someone desperate to no longer be pregnant. In the 1950s and the 1960s, there were between 200,000 and 1.2 million illegal abortions each year, according to the Guttmacher Institute. Around 200 to 300 women died per year when trying to end pregnancy during that time. Then Roe v. Wade passed in 1973, and the numbers of abortion-related deaths dropped, as did the hospital admissions for women suffering from complications in illegal abortions. Proper healthcare is crucial when it comes to helping women pursue their life plans. Even when starting on the same socioeconomic level as women who get abortions, women who are denied abortions are 3 times more likely to be below the poverty line just 2 years later, according to a 2015 report from the Reproductive Health Technologies Project, which drew data from the Turnway study, which said that once a woman has decided to have an abortion, whether she has access to the services needed in her pregnancy can significantly affect her long-term life trajectory, unquote. Although this issue is complex, in the end it comes down to giving people the tools they need to be as healthy as possible, both physically and mentally. Should you like to share this information, I found it in a piece at self.com. I've also posted it on my Facebook page at K Voice of Resistance. It's excellent to go to if you need to just find quick explanations or facts to come back at ignorant people on Facebook or wherever. These rundowns of some of the things that our Republican-run government is accomplishing is really getting to me. Staying educated about what is going on is damn depressing and stressful and infuriating. I don't even go into the Russian stuff or family business deals or most of the things Donald says in these shows, but still, I hear and know those things too. And there is so much, just so much. It is easily overwhelming and defeating. I had a resistance meeting tonight and it ran late and it was great meeting and inspiring, but it also cut short my time to work on the show. So stepping away from politics as I was putting this all together was it was impossible, and frustration and more was bearing down on me. I posted a few sentences that mostly consisted of curse words on Facebook and stared into space for a while. Stared into the void for a while. Finally, the clock was ticking, so I took a deep breath and I took to the internet for inspiration. Scary place to go for inspiration, I know, but if you know where to look. Quickly, I came across an interview on The Rachel Maddow Show with Elizabeth Warren, two of my favorite ladies. You can find the full interview on my Facebook page at K-Voice of Resistance. It's her talking about her book. She says a lot of things in it, but in the end, she starts to get into her story about Donald's election and the day after. See, she went to the inauguration because she had to see it with her own eyes.
I want to think about it every single moment when I wake up. I mean, every day when I wake up.
The next day, she is heading to the Women's March. It is cold, a cold day. Then it's, what do we do? She thinks, how do we fight?
We got to have an army. We got to have an army because it's the only way we can do this. We don't have the votes in the House. We don't have the votes in the Senate. We got to have an army. And I'm thinking, how do you raise an army? Where does an army come from? What does an army look like in a case like this? And so as we're rounding the corner to go into Boston Common, I look up and I'm seeing all these people moving toward the common, the women in pink pussy hats and men pushing strollers and kids on bicycles. And I look over and there's this man with this little girl on his shoulders, and she's holding up this sign, and the sign, hand-lettered, carefully done, says, "I fight like a girl." Well, me too, sweetie. And that for me was the moment. I said, this is our army.
We are the army. We are in the resistance. We are fighting. And her story started to turn my mood. Finally, she closed with this, sealing the deal.
Democracy has changed in this country over the past few months. Democracy has changed, and it's democracy when we get engaged, when we get out there, when we get in this fight, which is what I talk about here. When we do that, we will make our voices heard, and we will return this government to one that works for the people.
Ultimately, to officially perk up my mood, I played Nancy Pelosi saying doo-doo a few times, and I got my mood in a place where I could go back to work.
Broken promises on America's health care, F minus. I think President Trump is really making fools of the members of Congress of his own party. If they vote on it, the minute they cast that vote, they put doo-doo on their shoe, tattoo on their forehead, and they have to explain it to their children. At some point, they're going to have to explain it to their children. What did they do to make America sick again? Doo-doo on their shoe. Doo-doo, doo-doo on their shoe. Doo-doo. Do-do, do-do on their shoe.
Okay. We need to figure out what things keep us sane and keep us engaged. We can't always step away from the fray, so learn what will allow sanity to prevail. Sometimes if you can't step away and zero out and forget about politics for a while, that may be the best option, but when you can't, what can you do? What quick tricks can you have in your pocket? Otherwise, we will devolve into emotions and chaos. And chaos is a weapon of the opposition. They want us emotional and in disarray and afraid and panicked. They want us to feel defeated and angry. If we can find a way to turn our anger into a passion and our fear into motivation and pride, if we come at them inspired and alive, they're not going to know what to do. It's going to diminish them, and they're not going to be able to stand it. So find your path there. I am definitely not great at staying on this path, but moment to moment, it's an exercise in resilience.
Doo-doo on their shoe.
The climate march on Saturday was a giant success. Congratulations to all who showed up to show our representatives that the people care about our climate, our earth, and our future. The turnout was massive. Day one, the day of Donald's inauguration, was met with protest. I know, I was there. We outnumbered the people attending the parade, and of course, the day after was the largest mass protest in history, the Women's March. Now, on this 100th day, Donald was faced with 200,000 people in the D.C. area alone marching for climate against his policies. The website 350 put some things into numbers for us. 1,254 was how far riders on the bus from Wichita, Kansas, traveled to the People's Climate March, which was the longest bus trip of the hundreds of organized buses to the march. 3 days was how long a group of fishermen traveled by boat to protect their livelihoods and community as part of the Climate March by Sea. No fishermen, no farmers, no food. 2016 was the hottest year in recorded history. beating out 2015 and 2014, which are the second and the third hottest year slots. 182 politicians, the number of members of Congress who were climate change deniers in 2016. Zero is the amount of money the administration hopes to commit to environmental justice programs in the EPA budget. $365 million is the net worth of Donald's Secretary of State Rex Tillerson after being the CEO of ExxonMobil, which knew the truth about climate change and covered it up for decades. And everyone is the people needed to change everything. And the marches did not stop there.
If a guy spent 70 years on this earth showing no regard for working people, there's no record that he's supported minimum wage or supported collective bargaining or invested in poor communities or... And then suddenly he's going to be the champion of working people? Come on. Come on, man. Apparently in a speech yesterday, he started talking about global elites, that there was a conspiracy of global elites. This is a guy who spent all his time hanging around trying to convince everybody he was a global elite. Talking about how great his buildings are, how luxurious and how rich he is and flying around everywhere. And all he had time for was celebrities. And now suddenly he's acting like he's a populist out there. Man, I'm going to fight for working people. Come on, man.
Man, I miss that guy. And he was so right. Back in the days when we thought that Donald wouldn't actually get elected and it was a laughing matter. On Monday, across the world, people walked off jobs, walked out of schools, and took to the streets in solidarity with workers and unions for May Day rallies and marches. Here's a brief history about May Day from Al Jazeera.
The 1st of May is traditionally a workers' celebration with 19th century roots. In 1886, more than 200,000 workers across the United States went on strike, demanding an 8-hour working day. A few days later, protesters faced off with police in Chicago. Several were killed in what became known as the Haymarket Affair. During the Cold War, May Day military parades were held in communist countries such as Russia, China, North Korea, and Cuba. Recently, anti-capitalist protests have been held on May Day. Statues were defaced during fighting between police and protesters in London in 2000. This year, U.S. states are planning to mark the 10th anniversary of a massive May Day march. More than 1.5 million people took to the streets to support worker and immigration rights in 2006.
People were not only marching for workers' rights, but for equal rights, immigration rights, and common causes. The union stood up and said, when one group is under attack, all of us are under attack. One of the main focuses was immigration, because you do not have workers' rights without immigrant rights. The mass protest was coordinated by labor, immigration, and other progressive groups. Think about it. We had a huge turnout for the science march. Right after that was the climate march. And then more than days later, we had this march with massive turnouts countrywide. The resistance is on a roll.
Arriba, abajo, Trump a carajo.
Well, back to it. On Sunday evening, our poor beleaguered representatives were hard at work reaching an agreement to fund the government through September, marking it the first bipartisan legislation this Congress has passed since Russia put our kleptocrat in chief in place. Now, consider this. Republicans have control of both houses and the presidency, and they had the power to pass the bill without the Democrats, and still the Democrats were surprised by truly how much they got on. And mark my words, they could not have gotten so far were it not for the army behind them. And the Dems were also surprised by how much of Donald's wish list got kicked to the curb.
He's an amazing negotiator, maybe the best ever in the history of this world.
Trump lawyer Michael Cohen, also known for asserting that marital rape is not rape. Anyway, the Washington Post put out a piece entitled, "The 8 Ways Trump Got Rolled in His First Budget Negotiation." Satisfying and relieving headline, don't you think? For one, the budget not only rejected funding the wall, it added strict restrictions to funding it, such as adding strict limitations on how Donald can use new money for border security. For example, he must invest in new technology and repair existing fencing, while the Republican administration insists they already have the statutory authority to start building the wall under a 2006 law. They are now prevented to do so. Ha! The $1.5 billion for border security is also half as much as the White House requested. There's also no cuts in funding the sanctuary cities, something a federal judge last week said would be required for the Justice Department to follow through on its threats. And there is also no money for a deportation force. Though I heard something at a meeting today that I need to do more research on, that there's something in this budget that gives Sessions certain powers over who's designated a sanctuary city or something. I don't know. Don't quote me. I need to research it. But, you know, with all the good or when there's big wins, there's always something shady going on in the fine print. So it wouldn't surprise me. I'll get back to you on that. Okay, number two. Non-domestic spending will go up. Despite Trump's insistence that he would not let it happen, the president called for $18 billion in cuts. Instead, he's going to sign a budget with lots of sweeteners that grow the size of the government. $4.6 billion put aside to permanently extend health benefits to 22,000 retired Appalachian coal miners and their families. $295 million was included to shore up Medicaid in Puerto Rico. $61 million to reimburse local law enforcement agencies for the cost of protecting Trump when he travels to his residences in Florida and New York. $2 billion in disaster relief money for states and more, much more. 3. Obama's cancer moonshot is generously funded. The administration asked to slash spending at the National Institute of Health by $1.2 billion for the rest of this fiscal year. Instead, the NIH will get a $2 billion boost. 4. Gloriously, Trump fought to cut the EPA by a third. The final deal trims its budget by just 1%. 5. He didn't defund Planned Parenthood, period. 6. Donald got less than half as much money for the military as he said was necessary, which is good because his requirement was outrageous. 7. Democrats say they forced Republicans to withdraw more than 160 writers, and people say the Democratic Party is defunct and inept. And then there's this. This budget blocks the Justice Department from restricting the dispensing of medical marijuana in the states where it has been legalized. And finally, let's not forget 8. To keep negotiations moving, the White House has already agreed last week to continue paying Obamacare subsidies. These are wins that the Democratic Party worked hard to get for us, and make no mistake, we worked to get it for us too. The people showing up in marches and phone calls has weakened the power of the right and softened their resolve, not to mention it fortified the Democrats. We have ensured that we are an inexorable part of every negotiation. It is becoming very clear that the people have greater power than the president, so long as we choose to exercise it. Okay, back to business. The healthcare fight is back on. Call, 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 call. We stopped them last time, and we can do it again.
Those phone calls freaked people out.
That's about all the time I have. Thank you so much for listening to my show, K-Voice of Resistance, on the Crab Diving Network or on your favorite podcasting app. On the next episode, I plan to break down the various forms of healthcare plans that were California or anywhere to go single-payer or Medicare for all that we would be facing, and to learn the language we should use to make it sound palatable when selling it. All right, until then, take care of yourselves, and as always, resist.
El pueblo está en las calles exigiendo libertad. Arriba.